Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Terrell on the Twitch says, would the Texans accept less in a trade down at 2 so that someone would jump the Colts for quarterback? If the Texans are worried about what the Colts are doing on draft day,
they're not good enough.
I question the Texans. Like, it's such a loser mentality to me. Oh, I'm scared of what the Colts are going to do. I'm going to take less in a trade from a non-division rival to make sure that I'm screwing the Colts. And here's the other thing. If you're scared of who the Colts are taking at quarterback in a trade up for number 2, then you should probably be selecting that quarterback at number 2, yep. Right? Yep. If you're scared that Indy's trading up to 2 for QBX, then you should probably be taking that quarterback. Just saying. So ESPN 97.5, Joe George doing a tremendous job with this. He pulled the ESPN 97.5 personalities from 7A all the way to late hits. And he asked us, who do you have the Texans going at number 2, going at number 12? Granato had Anderson and JSN. Lance had Tyree Wilson and Nolan Smith. I think Lance has kind of moved off of that now with Will Anderson at 2. Paul had Levis and Nolan Smith. Smart guy, that Paul Gallant. Branham had Levis and Nolan Smith. Blankers had Anderson, JSN. Jake had Tyree Wilson. Will Levis sliding to 12. Interesting scenario that I wouldn't hate. Cody had Bryce Young. Lucas Van Ness. BK had Anderson, Richardson, and then Patrick had Stroud and JSN. So that's the ESPN 97.5 personalities who they have going 2 and 12. New information for me, I feel like the Texans are going Will Anderson, if I'm being completely honest. I think Will Anderson's the pick. I think that there is still possibility Caserio throws the curveball, goes with his second quarterback on his big board, which would be Will Levis. To me, it's down to those. Well, I'll throw Tyree Wilson in there, too. I think it's Anderson, drop down a tier, Levis, drop down a bit of a tier, Tyree Wilson at 2. Now, if they trade down, I think it's where Tyree Wilson comes into play.
I think, again, I'm leery every time I hear Tyree Wilson. I'm leery because I already was leery a year ago because I don't want a player that has an injury-prone history. I don't want a player that's been injured recently. I don't want a guy that, and again, because Stingley drove me nuts. We already wanted Sauce ahead of time, but when you didn't get Sauce and then you had Stingley and you barely saw him and he didn't play the right system, and you're like, what the hell did you draft him for in the first place? And then Sauce was just over there, you know, covering everybody and doing everything and winning Defensive Rookie of the Year. I don't want to see Tyree Wilson. I want Will Anderson if you're going to go high and take your own pick. Mm-hmm. And then I'm fully convinced right now that I don't think they like a quarterback well enough to where if JSN's available and you can add to your receivers, perfect. If he's not, best player available. I'm not sold on a quarterback anymore. If one of those quarterbacks should fall, and I don't think that they will, then I'm totally fine with them picking up one of those quarterbacks at 12.
What do you think the chances are of that? Like the quarterback play for the Texans? Because right now, trends in Vegas trends, it seems like they're going defensive end. What's the play at QB for the Texans? Like, I mean, worst case scenario, you got Davis Mills on the roster. Like, what are the options? What is and look, we've been kind of big picture. We've had a macro point of view when it comes to the Houston Texans. We have not been selling our souls to the devil to draft a quarterback. We've been, let's look at this from a big picture point of view. I think D'Amico Ryans is looking at this from a big picture point of view. Don't like the quarterback? You like somebody else more? Take BPA, take the best player. Totally cool with that. Can they really go into next season, though, with Davis Mills as the starter?
You don't have to. I mean, you don't necessarily have to. First of all, you got your guy Case Keenum.
So what? I don't think Case Keenum's going to start over Davis Mills because they're going to be in like figure something out. Let's learn a little bit more about Davis Mills. Let's see if there's any hope at all. Whereas Case Keenum, you know what you got. You got a veteran who's really good to help groom and develop young quarterbacks.
The biggest thing to me is it would be one thing if Davis Mills was playing the same system for another year. Then you could say, oh, we still got Davis Mills. He knows the system. He could conceivably get a little bit better, and he's going to be just fine. But because you got a Bobby Slowick system that he doesn't have any clue of running,
I think he's actually kind of suited for a Bobby Slowick system.
Well, okay.
I think he fits their scheme pretty good.
But I'm just saying, you're going to take a guy like Case Keenum, who's an experienced NFL quarterback, that at least they know that he'll understand, you know, crash coursing and whatever they got to put him through, and he'll probably be able to, he'll be fully capable of driving the bus. You just don't know how fast and how far.
Yeah.
So you've got a guy like that. But you can still look at Mac Jones. You can still look at Trey Lance. I think a future third could probably get you Trey Lance. If the Niners are so ready to turn the page, and like we've said previously, the two guys in your building should know him just about as good as anybody except for Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, because they saw him every single day at practice. If they saw enough in Trey Lance, and it doesn't have to be for your franchise quarterback of the future, it just has to be for this season.
Yeah, if he sucks, then
exactly.
Great.
Right, and it's worth the pick. Because you at least got someone credible that you can at least try for a year. And again, in a new system, in a new opportunity, maybe he shows you a different side of him that the Niners didn't see, and you're pleasantly surprised. But you're still set up so that you can go quarterback next year and you have options. You can even explore free agency. But you don't have to be hell-bent on a quarterback, and there's still, even if you don't do it tonight and the rest of the weekend, there are still ways that you can get through.
Yeah, I think the plan, like the very last plan in my mind, is Davis Mills. Like, I really don't think that they're thinking of the idea of let's get more intel on Davis Mills to know where he's at in his rookie deal. I think that the first, like, if you go just, let's go chronological here, a timeline. Like, the first thing would be quarterback slipping to you at 12 and or trading up from 12 back into like 7 or 8 to trade for a quarterback that's falling. Very dangerous to do that, and I don't think you like that quarterback that much if you're willing to do that. It means you're okay with that guy. Like, you're cool with that guy. You can live with him. You can live without him. If you get him, great. If you don't, great.
I think that's the true definition of a luxury pick. When someone falls into your lap that you weren't planning on taking.
Right. Like, if you're not taking the quarterback at 2, you don't love that quarterback. You might be cool with him. You might be willing to see what it looks like for 4 years, but you're not in love with a quarterback if you don't take him at 2 and then you trade up for him at 9. Like, you just don't love that quarterback.
And you know what I think happens 12. Before you take him? You're still exploring other teams that might have been more enamored with him first before you take him yourself.
Yeah, potentially.
If Levis is sitting there, or CJ Stroud, and if you weren't high on him, and I don't want to say that you aren't, because I don't want to burst your bubble, but just say that you're not exactly enamored with him, but all of a sudden you realize you're going to probably be forced to have to take him. Before you even consider being forced to have to take him, explore the teams that were still looking quarterback, that were thinking about moving up, to see if any of those teams call you, or maybe they're already calling you, saying, hey, what do you want for 12? And then you have a chance that to once again get more draft capital and stay away from a guy you're not sold on.
Right. And then I think after that, like, if it's not one of those scenarios, quarterback at 12, trade up with using that pick at 12, it's probably trading into the second half of the first round for a Hendon Hooker, which, again, does that excite you? And then after that, it's probably a second, third-round draft pick for a Mac Jones or Trey Lance. After that, it's a mid-round quarterback that's fighting for a job with Davis Mills.
After that, it's
Lamar Jackson, which I think is pie in the sky, pipe dream, and silly.
I think that if they don't take a quarterback at 2 or trade back in, I think we're going to be very disappointed with next year.
Is it Davis Mills?
I don't even think it is. I think you're going into a different territory of bad quarterback play. You're talking Mitch Trubisky, Carson Wentz.
Trubisky's, I think, on a team. I think he signed
his deal's non-guaranteed. Pittsburgh could cut him tomorrow.
Okay.
So it's like, I think that's the kind of territory you're walking into. So you're talking Carson Wentz, Mitch Trubisky, like these bums.
I don't think that's the case. I really don't. I think they would give Davis Mills a third year in a new offense, in their offense, to see what they got. If he succeeds, it's like, cool, we fixed Davis Mills. If he fails, well, it's cool, we won 3 games, and now we're going to draft one of these top quarterbacks. I don't see a scenario in the world where they play a fourth, fifth tier, terrible free agent quarterback.
I hope you're right. Like, I hope I'm very right.
I'd rather
see
Mills. I'll be honest with you. I'd rather see Mills than Mitch Trubisky, Carson Wentz,
absolutely,
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I would.
Even Trey Lance.
No, that Trey Lance isn't that conversation.
No, I'm throwing him into the conversation.
That's a different question. But I'm not interested in Trubisky and Wentz and like all these retread free agent quarterbacks. Trey Lance, I'm open to the idea of Trey Lance and or not and Mac Jones. I'm interested in the idea of Trey Lance or Mac Jones, depending on the price. Mac Jones had a terrible sophomore year. Mac Jones' offensive coordinator last year was Matt Patricia.
Was a defensive coach, right.
He was good as a rookie. He's a former first rounder. He was in consideration for San Francisco when they traded up and then got Trey Lance. Like, I'm intrigued by Mac Jones. I'm intrigued by Trey Lance. Depending on the price.
What about Bailey Zappi? Like, did he do anything in New England last year that, like, if they're going to go all in with Mac Jones, that's the guy you take the fire on?
I'd rather
on?
See Davis Mills than Bailey Zapp.
He's like
Bailey Zapp.
All these incredible college records. Like, he played Isn't good for New England.
No, it's Zapp.
It's not Zappy?
Mm-mm. It's not? It's nope. not Zappy?
It's Bailey Zapp.
I think Zappy's better.
I would agree.
I thought it was Zappy.
I would agree with
so
you.
So I'm calling him Zappy.
Fair enough.
When I look at it, then I ask you guys the question.
Well, Pro Football Reference says it's Zappy.
I thought it was Zappy because he started against Green Bay last year, and I thought I heard Zappy way too much.
I stand corrected.
My question then becomes, who has the higher price tag? Because to what you said, Mac Jones has proven he can play in the NFL.
Yeah, he's a good rookie.
So do you think, what do you think New England is asking for or can get for him?
See, because, honestly, if you're asking me that for sure, like I don't think that Bill Belichick trades Mac Jones for anything less than a first round
pick. That's what I was going to say. Like, I think you could get Trey Lance for a third. I don't think you could get
that
Mac
might
Jones.
Even...
I don't think you could get Mac Jones for anything less than a first.
I agree with the Mac Jones part. The Trey Lance one's interesting to me. Like,
I know that
it's I don't. The I'm Bill not even O'Brien, sure it's a third.
I was going to say it's the Bill O'Brien theory, right? It doesn't matter what you paid for him. It's what you got to get pennies on the dollar for once you realize that you made a dumb trade.
Would you trade 33 for Mac Jones?
Maybe.
I think it's in play. I definitely
would have to consider
because
that.
Now you're going BPA. Let's go, Will
but
Anderson.
But you got to have that figured out before the first round of the draft, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to know before the draft starts. I'm getting Mac Jones at 33, then I know I can go two defensive players at 1 and 12.
Well, I mean, they're not. I mean, at 2 and 12. They don't care if they win next year. Like, they're telling you, they don't care if they win next year. So, like,
right? But you don't ever think you take quarterback completely out of the equation.
No, it could be Plan B. It could be Plan B. Plan B could be like, we like Levis, Stroud, Richardson, one of the three. We don't love them. We're not picking them at number two. So they're telling you they don't love them, but they want to date them. They want to see. So they could be willing to trade up. You swing and miss on a trade up, and I think Plan B would be Mac Jones for 33.
Yeah, I think that I'd be willing to give a third round pickup for Trey Lance for a year.
I would be willing to give up a third. I think San Francisco would want more. I'd be willing to give up 33 for Mac Jones. I think they would want more.
I also think the only thing that you have in your corner in that regard are the two guys that have seen him play and if they see something in him. Because otherwise, there's no way I think that it's a horrible sign that Frisco is willing to take a third and dump him out of the building when your starter from a year ago is out for the first four games
but
of the year at least.
That goes both ways because you got D'Amico and Slowik on this side.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. They can be
that's what I'm saying. They might see something and like him, but on the other side, it still makes you a little bit hesitant. Going, why are they giving up on him when they really need him?
Yeah, I'm higher on Mac Jones than most people are. I'll be completely go look at Mac Jones' rookie year. Mac Jones had a
screwed by having
year.
Matt Patricia as the coordinator.
Look, what skill position? Name the Patriots' best skill position player last year. I mean, Stevenson probably, their running back. Who was the best pass catcher? Marcus Jones is a great call.
Jones.
He probably scored more touchdowns than any other skill guy. Go Cougs.
I mean, Jacoby Myers.
Mid.
Rashawn Stevenson. Or Rashard.
Stevenson's good.
Yeah,
Stevenson's
good.
A really good, good, solid running back. But, he's going to catch 60 passes out of the backfield. But, like, who was Mac Jones' best receiving target last year?
Mac Jones, like, was thrown to Jacoby Myers.
Mid.
Hunter Henry.
Mid.
Who was the old Titans?
Jonu Smith, was he there last year?
Yeah,
mid.
He was there last year. Like, their offense was a joke last
Terrible.
Year. Hunter Henry still with them last year?
Yeah, he's still with them this year. The Tyquan Thornton, they picked him in the second round. He caught like 20 passes. Like, they had no skill around Mac Jones. They had Matt Patricia calling his plays. He was good as a rookie. I like Mac Jones more than most. 713-780 ESPN. I don't either. Like, even if he is, I think Bill Belichick would have to be blown away. I think it would cost a first round pick. And I'm not doing that. Well, I like Mac more than most. I'm not trading a first-round pick for Mac.
If Bill Belichick is saying, I'm done with this quarterback, why would you want him? Like, Bill Belichick is known for trading away veteran players and players when he thinks they're over the hill. And 90% of the time, he is right. They
Great
go
point.
To their new team in free agency. He doesn't pay them, and they're a joke. So if Nick Caserio gets a phone call from Bill Belichick,
yep,
he knows he's getting hoodwinked.
And it's different than the San Francisco situation because, like, yeah, I could see San Francisco giving up on Trey Lance, but at least you have dudes that were there last year. You've had D'Amico and you had Slowick who were there every single practice with Trey Lance. They've seen him do everything. You don't have that intel in New England. 713-780-ESPN. That's our HRMP listener line. Number
Nick
to call,
Caserio
number to text.
Spies. He's got videotape.
Jack Easterby. 713-780-3776. Blankers, I have a draft fear. And it could happen before the Texans literally make a draft pick. I'll tell you what that fear is next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Did I make a questionable decision?
Oh, yeah,
There was food in the kitchen. I don't know how old it is.
Yeah, Greg, go ahead.
Don't know how long it's been here.
It's from this morning.
Thank goodness. It tastes very good. It's a little sausage, little wings. Who brought it?
Damaris, I think,
yeah,
for the bench.
Oh.
Yanni and company.
Oh, I love Damaris. Damaris is great. Good
evidently,
people.
You loved it
I didn't
so
know
much,
it was Damaris.
You didn't want to take more than one bite. You
if I knew it was Damaris.
Jammed it all in your pie hole.
No, I ate a lot. I ate a lot in a short
period of
time.
Bite.
Yeah, there was some sausage back there and some wings back there. You know how I feel about wings. Smoked wings. They do that really good at Damaris.
It's a lot of meat in your mouth, Jeremy. You put a lot of sausage in, and you could have taken more than one bite.
There's that Blankers elementary humor.
I mean, Joe had to ask if you needed a little extra time. I didn't even want to go on Twitch.
I literally bit off a little bit more than I could chew.
I guess so.
I have a huge fear when it comes to the draft tonight, and it can literally happen before the Houston Texans even turn in a pick. This has nothing to do with a significant, like a specific player. We know how we feel about certain guys. We have our favorites. We have guys that we aren't huge fans of. Albert Breer, in his recent notes about what he's hearing with the draft, says, I heard Houston has been legitimately torn this week over whether to go QB or edge rusher at number two, and owner Cal McNair is pretty involved in the discussion on that. Blankers, this is my biggest draft fear before we even know who the pick is, before 7 o'clock even rolls around. Houston Texan ownership does not need to be making football decisions at all. What is Cal McNair, and many people are going to say, well, it's not Cal, it's Hannah. What if Cal and Hannah McNair done to earn the right to be picking number two? I know it's their organization, but let the football people make the football decisions. Let the upper management, some people get mad when we call them owners because Janice McNair. Cal and Hannah McNair should be so far away from who is being picked at number two, and this flat out terrifies me. The same ownership group that gave Bill O'Brien power to be a general manager was the worst general manager of all time until they gave Jack Easterby power to be a general manager, and then he replaced O'Brien as the worst general manager of all time. The same owner that signed off on the DeAndre Hopkins trade. We can go on and on and on and on. What if Cal and Hannah McNair done that gives you any sort of confidence them picking at number two? If you're telling me right now that Cal and Hannah are making the decision on number two, then you are watching a dumpster fire on Kirby all over again, and this was supposed to be the offseason where the Texans gave us hope. D'Amico, hope, great. Cal and Hannah making the pick at two, they've lost all hope for me.
I absolutely believe that Cal and Hannah should be involved, and they should make every single, they should be involved in every single pick tonight.
You're trolling.
As it relates to picking the menu, picking the dessert, picking the beverages, picking all the snacks. They can do all those things. But I could not agree more that there never should be a tie that is broken by them. There should never be a football decision that is discussed with them tonight. They should sit in the room and look. And I've been in enough of these situations where I know that with the Rockets, the Les Alexander was heavily involved, and it's his money, and it's his team, and he was involved in all of the discussions. At the end of the day, he still trusted his basketball operations people. I don't even want it to get that close with Cal and Hannah. I want them to be, if they want to hang out in the room, and Cal, of course, wants to get into that smorgasbord of food, go have at it.
Go smoke a brisket.
Yeah. You know what? And when you find out that they just called for seconds, you go get that while the football guys go get another pick. I don't want them anywhere near these picks, and they should have nothing to say impactfully as it relates to making picks. That's just a fact.
The only thing that they should do is if the room is split 50-50, they make the decision of whose side they're choosing.
Who breaks the tie?
Are they going with Caserio or are they going with D'Amico?
Nick Caserio has in his contract that he has full power.
Yeah, well.
Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely.
But he also went on stage and pouted like a child and said he would step down if the new coach didn't
want him. He was just saying that there's not one person in this organization that's bigger than the other. That's all he was saying.
But he also was saying, by the way, I got a six-year contract. You can do whatever the hell you want. I'm still getting paid every 1st and 15th.
But that should be the message tonight still. If he really does believe that like one person's not bigger than the rest of the organization, then he has to listen to what D'Amico Ryans has to say. And if D'Amico wants to go defense,
then someone
has to break the tie.
There has to be a peacekeeper in the middle, a mediator that just determines this is the pecking order. But that should have been predetermined before the draft starts. That should have been in a pre-draft meeting where we say, look, we may get into conundrum here where we got two sides of the table fighting over either a position group or a player or something else. We've got to determine how are we breaking ties tonight.
Here's the other thing about this. Like, do you think D'Amico is going to throw a fit about going with a defensive player? Do you think Nick Caserio would throw a fit about going with a defensive player if there's not a quarterback that they love? Well, then if that's the case and they're both like aligned that they want defense, where's this quarterback love coming from? Probably ownership that wants to sell shirts and sell tickets and sell merch and try to bring hope to the organization to keep the public relations up. That means it's not a football decision. Now it's becoming a business decision, which, look, we totally understand that owners in sports make business decisions before football decisions, basketball decisions, baseball decisions. That's fine. But somebody who follows the sports teams in this city, if they're worrying about business versus worrying about winning, then I can't stand those decisions. I will not support those decisions whatsoever.
This is the scariest thing that you know you want to avoid. This is why I'm in agreement with Jeremy that you stay away from Hannah and Cal having anything to do with this. This is the Washington draft, the year that their football room was just hell-bent on exploring every possible due diligence opportunity, and they were not going to take the quarterback from Ohio State that ended up going to Pittsburgh eventually.
Dwayne Haskins.
Daniel Snyder walked in the room and said, I don't care what any of you think, say, or do, or want us to take. We're taking Haskins. And it screwed up the entire franchise. It turned them upside down. It pissed off all of football operations. And it was like culturally and like communicatively within that franchise, it was a game changer and it was a negative. You can't have that. You got to avoid that. Jerry Jones is one thing because he's the general manager too. And even that screwed up. But at least he's pretty heavily engaged in football throughout the season. I still don't like it. I don't like Dan Snyder and what he did, and I don't want to be in that same situation if I'm the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I mean, Snyder, that's the second time they did it because he made them take RG3 with the second pick, trade up for RG3, mm-hmm. and then they let Mike Shanahan take Kirk Cousins later in the draft. But, like, the Jerry Jones thing is interesting because he tried this.
He's also the GM.
But his son,
that's what I'm saying.
But his son stopped it. They were going to take Johnny Manziel, and then Stephen Jones.
He was enamored with Johnny.
Stephen Jones stepped in and stopped it from happening. So, like, someone has to be the smartest person in the room and set Cal straight.
Right.
And look, Cal McNair is there for a reason. Like, he is there to, like, make money and get the fans excited. And that's why J.J. Watt's here. Because when everyone hates the pick, they're going to walk J.J. Watt out on the stage tonight and announce they're retiring number 99 and going to put him in the Ring of Honor. So when everyone's booing them, they have to stop. Like, that's why J.J. Watt's here. I'm fully convinced of that.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't disagree at all. But Cal McNair and ownership making the pick is the worst case scenario for the Texans. One other trend that I've noticed from Texans fans is they want ownership to step in to support who they want them to pick. Like, I want CJ Stroud. Save us, Cal and Hannah. What? Like, you're just doing that because you want your pick. Like, you want ownership to step in because you want your pick. Tell yourself at the beginning of the draft process who you feel most confident running an NFL draft. Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans or Cal and Hannah McNair? This logic of save us, Cal and Hannah, is the stupidest thing that I've ever seen.
How is it just because his wife is involved now? I was just going to say that Cal suddenly has anybody should have any faith or hope Cal could save the day. Even if it's Cal and Hannah, Cal has done enough to scare the crap out of you that you shouldn't want either one of those two making football decisions. Let him handle PR. Let them handle barbecue. Let Hannah handle the tough questions when it comes to the media and all the different marketing and uniform questions and ticket prices and you know, all that other crap. But stay the hell out of football. That's all anybody could ask that has a reasonably sound mind and a fan of this team. Stay the hell out of football. You can have a say-so in the uniforms. Okay, I still am a little leery of that, but that's fine. But just don't get involved in, like, football player decisions.
Latest odds to go number 2. Anderson minus 330. Stroud is now second at plus 300. Levis and Tyree Wilson plus 750.
And some places, like Bovada, have removed the number two pick from their betting odds.
That must be there's heavy movement on Will Anderson. So there's some, I think there's heavy movement on Anderson.
Yeah,
and they're trying to save their butts.
They're trying to. They're taking it off the board because they know that something's going down.
Did you see ESPN just did comps on both players? Tyree Wilson.
No, comp, I missed it.
Tyree Wilson's comp and Will Anderson's comp. Tyree Wilson was Bradley Chubb. And Will Anderson was, who's the A&M? Von Miller.
Von Miller.
I'll take Von Miller over Bradley Chubb.
Yeah, that's a reach. Like if you're going to tell me Will Anderson's Von Miller, that's a steal at two.
No question.
I don't think he's going to be Von Miller.
I don't think he is either, but I'm just saying if those were the comps, plus you're talking about the injury history, I'm going Will Anderson.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. All this draft stuff going on. Meanwhile, the Astros go into the best home field in all of baseball, the mighty Trop. All 4,000 plus that are in attendance. But the Rays hadn't lost a game all year inside the Trop until the Astros went into town and took 2 of 3 in Tampa. Are the Astros the best team in baseball again? And how about Hunter Brown? Is Hunter Brown the best starting pitcher in this rotation from a talent point of view? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Astros beat the Tampa Bay Rays yesterday in the mighty Trop. Best home field advantage in all of baseball. Until the Astros come into town, the Astros take 2 of 3 inside of Tropicana Field, where the Rays had not lost all year. Prior to the Astros coming into town, they won yesterday 1-0, wrapping up an unbelievable road trip. I mean, you're going to Atlanta. Many people think the best team in the National League. You sweep the Braves. You go into Tampa, best record in the American League, undefeated at home. You take 2 of 3. The Astros had this like daunting schedule of 6 games in 6 days, all on the road, best team in the NL, best team in the AL. And all they did was go 5-1 and flex again that they are the best team in all of baseball.
It ain't life grand, because we kept saying, when are you guys were, you know, we kept saying, are you panicked after this series? Are you panicked after this series? You had to ask the question because everybody was looking. This is starting to be the equivalent. We may look back at this as the equivalent of that nasty Gotham run that we went on last year against the Yankees and the Mets. When everybody was questioning how good can you be, when everybody was saying, is this team up to par with what Vegas said with the top teams now currently constructed in Major League Baseball? Well, bitches, all you can do is take your flowers and go and run home and look at second place. Because right now what the Astros are telling you, we ain't going anywhere. It's still our place at the top of the American League and going to World Series, and we should be the favorite. And if you got problems with that, then come on into our place, or we'll come to yours and we'll show you what baseball's all about. They're doing it without two of their best offensive players. They're doing it with their fifth starter mowing down the best offense supposedly in the American League. They're taking a team that everybody couldn't get enough love to over the first part, and deservedly so. They were undefeated at home. That, you know what? But you took arguably the Vegas odds for the best team in the National League, and you kicked them in the jimmy, and you swept them right out of the door. Then you went to Tampa, did what you did. You already did it to Toronto at home. This is the same equivalent of sending a message to any and all that had any fears, concerns, or criticism and said, we ain't done yet, and we ain't going anywhere. You can come in anytime you want.
You felt strongly about that.
I did, because I really get sick and tired sometimes, especially the national media hype. All of a sudden, Tampa escalated with Vegas odds to be the favorite in the American League. I mean, we're not even a quarter of the way through the season, and suddenly Tampa's got everything. They play in a rinky-dink, like, circus building as it is, and they got a decent lineup, but we know what they do. They cheap sell. They do that stupid thing like they did again last night with a instead of a starting pitcher, whatever they call it, for two innings, an opener. I mean, good for you for being gimmicky baseball at its best with analytics, but the bottom line is talent rises to the top and it continues to stay there. That's why the Houston Astros are number one.
I kind of like what the Rays do, but not as much as I like what the Astros do. The Astros are fantastic. You mentioned Hunter Brown, the fifth man in their rotation. Title alone, he's nowhere near the fifth best pitcher in this rotation. Quite honestly, Blankers, I can make a case to you right now that Hunter Brown is the most talented pitcher in this rotation. I think his stuff is better than anybody else on the staff.
Well, you know the one that I think argues it. I think there's only one answer in terms of a guy that comes up with the with similar stuff that's a little bit more proven, and that would be Christian Javier.
Ooh, see, I actually think it's Fromber.
I think it's Christian Javier.
Javier's got great stuff, but he's got a two-pitch mix. Like, Hunter Brown can go deep into the repertoire.
I know, but I'm going fastball slider with,
those two are nasty.
With Brown and fastball slider with Javier, and I'm going, man, I mean, the fact that he's proven it on the biggest stage possible is the only thing that Hunter Brown doesn't have. But when you talk about those two guys and those two pitches for each of those two guys, and I know in the case of Hunter Brown especially, he's got a curveball, he's got some other pitches.
Yeah.
But when you talk about those two pitches with those two guys, I know Urquidy doesn't have it. I know Garcia doesn't have it. You're right. The only arguable one is Fromber because he's so consistently good at keeping the ball down and his curveball so good. It's a great problem to have. It's a great discussion to have. But I think that proving it on a bigger stage and doing the things that Javier did a year ago is the only reason why I would say that he's the best stuff on the staff.
That's why I couldn't go as far to say he's the best pitcher on the staff. I think he might be on his way to being the best pitcher on the staff.
Well, and this gives you even more credence as to Justin Verlander and passing on that contract.
Like, the Brown stuff to me is elite. I think, and again, I think he has the best stuff on this team, especially from a starting rotation point of view. Like, could you stack up Javier fastball slider with anybody else in this rotation's top two pitches? Yeah, I think that's fair to do. But Hunter Brown throws three pitches a lot. He throws three pitches more than 30% of the time. Christian Javier can't say that. That four-seam fastball is an elite fastball. Was touching, 97 yesterday with that fastball? He throws that slider at 92, which I believe they said yesterday on the broadcast is the hardest-throwing slider in baseball, second to Jacob DeGrom.
It's been him and DeGrom, yeah.
There's a 92-mile-per-hour slider that just falls off the table. And they were talking to him after the game. Julia Morales was in the booth yesterday, and she did that after-game interview, and he's like, yeah, I don't really know if it's a slider or a cutter. He doesn't even know what to call it, and it's one of the nastiest pitches in all of baseball.
I call it effective, and that's all I need to call it. Yeah, that's all I need to call it. I would just call it effective. You know what?
So good.
I'm gonna throw the effective here, and it's gonna work. Because that's, and you know what? You're gonna get all over me for this one too. There's a third pitcher in this discussion.
Lance.
Nope.
Well, I mean, to me, the top two are Hunter Brown and Fromber.
Right.
I'm talking starting rotation.
Oh, okay.
Who was your third?
Brian Abreu.
There's no doubt.
I mean, talk about.
I mean, I'm on Hunter Brown right now, the same way I was on Brian.
You
Abreu
talk about
last
his two pitch mix. The only thing is, he's not a starting pitcher. He doesn't do it for longer and deeper into games. But you talk about two young guys that you're going to have around for a while that you're going to have some fun watching. Those are the two guys with two nasty pitches.
Blankers. Brian Abreu, and like, he might have the best two-pitch mix in all of baseball. And I don't mean that in a hyperbolic way. He might be the best reliever in baseball. His ERA since last summer to right now laps Major League Baseball. Like, there's stats that actually back this up. He has the best ERA since last summer by almost a run versus any other reliever in all of baseball. I think Brian Abreu is the best reliever in all of baseball. I think Hunter Brown has the best stuff on this rotation. And look, that's a very high bar. Fromber's stuff, really good. Mike Trout once said that Fromber Valdez is the best stuff of anybody he's seen. Luis Garcia, his last two starts, unbelievable. Throwing that cutter, really good. So, like, and Javier, how can we forget Javier? Those four guys off the rip, Fromber, Javier, Hunter Brown, Luis Garcia, best rotation in baseball.
That's why everybody that freaked out about Verlander, I mean, that's why the Astros weren't freaked out. That's because whatever you get out of Urquidy is just icing on the cake, because you have so many options and your rotation was so deep. That's why you could have. That's why you didn't need to pay $40-some million a year for Grandpa Jones to have his arm tire out in the playoffs for another year or two. Thanks for the memories, but if that's what you want and you want Max Scherzer money, go play with Max. We'll move on and we're gonna be just fine.
See ya.
I mean, the thing with Hunter Brown's stuff is it's electric like JV was, but he didn't have a flyout that was left the infield.
That's right.
Yesterday until like the sixth inning.
Zero homers.
He also got
squeezed
really badly on the bottom part of the zone.
Yeah, he's pitched 50 2/3 in his career. He's given up zero home runs. So like Justin Verlander was prone, like, and he would get, you know, he was good with nine.
He was a fly ball pitcher.
And like it would happen, like a lot of his homers were guys when there was no one on base, so that was great. But like Hunter Brown with his stuff, and then he's getting all these grounders. Hunter Brown looks like he could be one of the best pitchers in baseball.
No question. And here's the thing I didn't like. He was getting squeezed not only at the bottom of the zone, but at the top of the zone. It's either one or the other, but I don't know if that's like NBA referees like to be a little extra tight on rookies.
Usually they're tighter. Yeah, that used to be the case a lot.
Right?
I haven't seen it as much anymore, but it used to be the case all the time.
And you had a veteran umpire behind the plate last night, and I was almost thinking, are you trying to screw with the young kid a little bit? Because give him one or the other, but he was getting screwed both high in the zone and low in the zone.
In the moment, like, it stinks. Like, hey, call that a strike. That's a strike. Strike him out. But, like, once you get through that and he throws seven-inning shutout baseball, looks dominant yet again, like, part of me likes it in hindsight. In hindsight. Now, in the moment, you're livid. But in hindsight, you're getting squeezed a little bit. Really good offense. Tough place to play. And you go seven shutout innings. Like, he doesn't get phased.
In retrospect, why I liked it? Because Maldi wasn't behind the plate.
Oh, yes.
He had to deal with it. He was able to mentally stay tough enough. He even asked the question at one point, was that low? But then he went right back to throwing baseballs, pitching at his best, and mowing people down. I loved that part.
And Diaz, he has proven that his arm is way better than Maldi's.
And I'd like to see the pop time on that.
And you know, the funny thing about yesterday, too, is like I like how they embrace the villain of whoever's running the social media account now, because the one guy left, and they're tweeting all these fun things out and quote tweeting or putting quotes, best offense in baseball. But then they tweeted that the Astros are 7-0 and Diaz starts behind the plate. They had to delete it.
For real?
They got bullied.
I did not notice that.
Yeah. I looked at my Twitter account because I quoted it and said, that's interesting. And then so they deleted their own tweet. All the things that they've been tweeting.
Who bullied them? Maldi's people?
Maldi and Dusty bullied them.
Probably right.
Dusty's not seeing what's on Twitter. Maldi definitely might.
Dusty is, for sure.
You think Dusty sees what's on Twitter?
Yeah.
No, I think Maldi sees it before Dusty.
Dusty Baker sees what's on Twitter.
Yeah, he's got a kid.
Doesn't matter.
I guarantee you, if the Astros tweet something that Darren knows that Dusty would not like, he sends it to his dad.
Okay. That's an interesting conversation.
I think Maldi has made a significant push to try and get out on social media more from the offseason to now. I think Maldi sees it way before Dusty.
Diaz needs to be playing 40% of the games. Give him another pitcher. Give him Urquidy. Give him Urquidy's struggling with Maldi. Give him Urquidy.
I don't disagree with that.
He has Hunter Brown.
You brought this up
yesterday.
Hunter
Brown's dominant. Yep. Give Yiner Diaz Jose Urquidy. Let him start 40% of the games. 713-780-ESPN. The Astros' best rotation in baseball. Hunter Brown, best stuff on this starting rotation. What about Dubon? How long is his hitting streak going to go? How about this bullpen that's starting to look pretty good as well? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jason on Twitter asking us, is the world ready for Mauricio Dubon to unseat DiMaggio? Mauricio DiMaggio, been leading off for the Astros. Dusty Baker joked about that yesterday. He was asked about, you know, Dubon getting to 20, the team loving it on the dugout. And he's like, yeah, they're rooting for him to get to 56. Can Mauricio Dubon get to 56 games? 713-780-3776. How high can it go, though? How high can this go for Mauricio Dubon? Pick your number. 713-780-3776. Pick your number. How far can this hitting streak go for Mauricio Dubon?
Saturday night.
So you think it ends Saturday night?
It ends
Saturday
night.
So he's got one more? So you think it goes
more.
To 20? Because it's 20 right now. So it goes to 21 games from blank.
Yep. How much do I like our listeners?
Not a lot. You're always bashing them behind the scenes.
Well, I already did this once, so we'll do it again. We'll take your official predictions.
Aaron Nola's on the mound Friday.
How long Mauricio Dubon's hitting streak goes.
Ooh, okay. That makes a difference.
First person to get it right wins a Killer Bees t-shirt.
We don't have one.
Joe. We're getting them made. I'm working on it.
I love that response. You sound like a mean girl.
They're going to happen.
All right, so pick the game. Only one person per game, though.
Yeah, once it's gone, it's gone.
So you get the exact hit streak right for Mauricio Dubon, then Joe George is going to give you a shirt. 713-780-3776.
I still think
Wheeler. Zach Wheeler.
Ooh, and Saturday night.
So you think he gets a hit on Nola, but not Wheeler?
Correct.
How about the bullpen? Philly bullpen.
I'm just telling you what I told you.
Falter goes on
Sunday. Ending Saturday night.
I think he gets through the weekend. I think he's going to, so it's 23, plays as the Giants Monday. Oh, it's going to end against his former team. 23 games for Mauricio Dubon's my number, but I can't win this t-shirt. So
I can't either.
You pick the how long Mauricio Dubon's streak goes. How long does this streak go for Dubon? He's at 20 now. Don't do anything under 20. 713-780-3776. And Joe George, the assistant to the regional manager, is going to hook you up with a Killer Bee t-shirt that we have not seen. Haven't seen any graphics. Haven't seen anything. What color is this t-shirt going
to
be?
Do we get to have any kind of... Do we have any right of first refusal, or is it just all you?
No, no. We can do what we did with the Lance McCullers thing.
No, no. I understand that.
I'm talking about what does the shirt look like?
Yeah, I'm saying you are. We haven't done that yet. But remember, for the Lance McCullers, was that if you get the Lance McCullers day right, that your picture is bigger than the other person's on the shirt or your name?
Oh, yeah.
We don't need our pictures. Yeah, we need a Killer Bee.
I wonder what the shirt's going to look like.
Of course you get refusal.
What's the shirt going to look like?
I don't know. I'm working on it. I got some ideas.
Doesn't it always scare you when he says he's working on it?
I don't know how to answer that.
Well, because you know what it means next, right? If he's working on it hard enough, that means he's taking off segments of our show to go do it somewhere down the hall.
He does most of his work noon to three.
Right. Yeah, he's normally working on something during our show where he can't be working on what he's supposed to be working on.
We call him the assistant to the regional manager. What is your real title? Like associate program director or something like that?
Assistant program director, yes.
APD?
You associated him.
He's the APD. He does most of his APD work noon to three, Monday through Friday.
I love The Office so much. I think I prefer assistant to the regional manager. I think we might just have to talk to Todd and David and just official title change.
Yeah. Go with it. You know when he's not doing assistant to the regional manager work during the bullpen weekends,
Saturday, 12 to 2.
Are y'all doing it 12 to 2 Saturday, Sunday?
Saturday 12 to 2. It'll be me and Beard this weekend, and then Sunday 10 to 12. RJ, Sean, and Brian.
Very good. There you go. Listen to the bullpen coming up this weekend. Be very good stuff. So, get your Mauricio Dubon hitting streak. How long does the Dubon hitting streak go? If you answer correctly, you have to be the first one to guess that game, though, how long it goes. Then Joe George is going to hook you up with a Killer Bee t-shirt that does not exist currently, but he'll figure it out. He'll get it done. One of his many hats that he wears. 713-780-3776. Somebody asking on the text line, talking about the rotation for the Houston Astros. 6738 says, should the Astros just bring up Whitley now and see how he does? He can't do much than Jose. He can't do much worse than Jose Urquidy.
Wait, say that again.
Basically, bench Urquidy, promote Forrest Whitley. See how he does.
No. Why are we doing all this right now? It's not broke. Don't fix it. Like, we just, you know, early in the season, everybody was criticizing every pitcher. They're not going deep enough into games. You know, they should be doing more. Good night. We're not even a quarter of the way through the season. We're not, and look who you're trying to put into the rotation. A guy that's done everything to let you down since he was the number one pitching prospect in your organization. Slow your roll on Forrest Whitley. Slow your roll on any criticism of the staff right now. Just let it all play out, please, for a while.
It's gonna take an injury for him to get called up. There's no rush to bring up Whitley. Now he's on the 40-man roster. I think he's your sixth starter currently, mm-hmm. right now. If Urquidy landed on the IL, if any of these starting five landed on the IL right now, I think they call up
more than Blanco.
Yeah, I don't think he's gonna be a starter. Like, he's going 2-3.
I mean, I know Dana Brown talked about stretching him out, but he's been bad.
That's the biggest. I think that's the and Dana Brown's actually been asked. Like, he's like, we're not gonna hesitate to call Forrest Whitley. But they're not gonna call him up because Jose Urquidy's had a bad start or a couple of bad starts. They're gonna allow Urquidy time to work it out, to pitch well. Now, if there's an injury, I firmly believe Forrest Whitley would be called up and would be making that spot start for the Astros. They will use him. I think at some point we see him in the major leagues this year. I think if there's not injuries, which is very unlikely, I think we see him in September as a September call-up and maybe pitch him out of the bullpen. So I believe we will see Forrest Whitley. I'm not demoting Jose Urquidy in late April. I'm going to give Jose Urquidy a lot of time and a long runway to figure it out.
I think you're looking at a similar scenario playing out like Hunter Brown. That's exactly the only way I think.
And maybe to a lesser extent, because I don't think they're as high on Forrest Whitley currently today as they were on Brown last year.
But, again, you make the point, and it's valid. It's spot on about the sixth starter. If they decide after they get through this stretch of games that we talked about where the day offs are placed in a good enough place that you don't need a sixth starter, but you get in the meat of the season and you're looking like you may need your pitchers to get a little extra rest and you want to make sure that they got plenty in the tank for the playoffs, then maybe you consider him as your sixth starter and you ramp that timetable up. Otherwise, he's your September call-up. He shows you what he can do against major league pitching. If he shows you that he can do it well, there's a good discussion to have for the playoff roster. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to. There's no rush right now.
No. I could see him at some point kind of working his way into maybe like a long relief role too. Like if the starting rotation isn't really something that's going to factor in, let's say like everybody stays healthy, Lance McCullers is back, maybe you're even using a six-man rotation, and then like Blanco really continues to struggle, I could see somewhat, well, I don't know, because McCullers has to take somebody's spot on the staff. Like when McCullers is coming back, yeah, it could be a six-man rotation, but you got to send down a starter. Oh. I think maybe he could be like a long reliever with some injuries, things like that.
I think Blanco could go down and McCullers is up.
That's what I said.
Oh, I thought, but he's not a starter.
But you're not, you're McCullers?
No, Blanco.
Right, but you go to a six-man rotation. So whenever you go to a six-man rotation, you got to take one less reliever.
Right.
But I was trying to figure out a way for McCullers and Forrest Whitley to be on the staff, assuming no other injuries. In which case, now you'd be looking at sending down Blanco and Martinez. And I don't think
I think realistic. Seth Martinez is the next guy to go.
You think it would be Blanco or Martinez first?
I think Blanco goes first. Right. But I'm saying, to your scenario, if you want a possibility of having Whitley right. and McCullers on,
I would agree.
Then I think it's Seth and it's Blanco.
I think that's the order right now. Yep. But I don't see really a scenario where they call up Whitley to be a like bottom end of the bullpen reliever over Seth Martinez. Like the importance just isn't there. So I don't really see that happening. Also a question, if you could reseed the Astros pitching rotation, what would you put it at right now? Let's just do power rankings because I don't really care about the order. The order is the order. Like I power rank the Astros starting rotation right now.
Well, I mean, Fromber.
Okay.
Then I still think Javier. Then I would go Hunter Brown, Garcia, and Urquidy.
I really want to make Hunter Brown my number one.
I know.
I want to put him in my did. Number one so badly. So badly. I just think
there's too many skins on the wall with one and two.
You're right. I'm going to go. I have Brown jumping Javier, though. I'm going to go Fromber 1, Brown 2, Javier 3, Garcia 4. And Garcia's been brilliant in his last two starts. And then Urquidy's a distant fifth. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Troy, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Troy?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up,
hey,
Troy?
I gave my prediction at 25 games. I wanted 24, but they take 25. Somebody took 24. But man, this is a question to ask. I just had one question. So what are you going to do with Dubon when Altuve comes back? Where are you going to put him? Because you clearly got to leave him in the lineup. And what do you think they're going to do with Brantley? These are great problems to have. I'll hang up and listen, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Troy. Appreciate you always listening to the show. Call more frequently, please. Look, I don't think you have to have him in the lineup. I think it's a luxury that he becomes a better offensive weapon than what you've had for your utility player in the past. And with the way Dusty gives guys days off, there's still plenty of opportunities to move him around and give him a game at second and give him a game at third and give him a game if you have to in the outfield. But your outfield's so good right now, just give Peña a day off at shortstop. You can rest between rest and rotation of rest with guys that are currently in the lineup. You can still find a way to find his name in the starting lineup 3 to 4 times a week, possibly. That's more than enough. I think that we're getting a little overly enamored with Dubon right now, too. We forget how less than mediocre he was at offensively a year ago. So you hope he settles in somewhere in the middle, but I don't think we should get overly starstruck with Dubon to say he has to be in the lineup. You can find a way, if he continues to hit well, to find spots for him to play, but I don't think you're talking about Jose Altuve now. When Altuve's back, great problem to have, but I ain't overly worried about how many days a week Dubon gets.
I think it's pretty easy to give him 4 or 5 starts a week, even when Altuve's back. He's your super utility. It's the way that Tampa Bay used Ben Zobrist back in the day, former Astro farmhand. It's the way they used Marwin Gonzalez back in the day, where if everybody is healthy, well, you're giving a guy a day off a week. And every single time that Bregman gets a day off, Peña gets a day off, Altuve gets a day off, he's automatically starting in one of those spots. Maybe not the outfield, though, because you have an outfield surplus.
Right. What about DH?
I mean, if you're in that spot, I'd rather DH a position player to get them off their feet and play Dubon at that position. Like if you want to give Altuve a half day off, okay, Altuve,
that's
you're DHing this day, and Dubon, you're going to
play
second.
You get this many starts, but you're still going to see time in other games just as a defensive replacement, or maybe a half a game.
Or he could just
You get up big in a lot of those games, and you sit some guys early.
I think it's still pretty easy to start Dubon at least 4 times a week, maybe even 5, if he continues to play well whenever you're at full health, because you're going to want to rest these guys. He's going to get starts for those guys. He's going to be your super utility guy, which is great, because I wanted a super utility guy all offseason. I didn't think the Astros had one. I stand corrected. It looks like Mauricio Dubon is that guy. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Every Thursday at 2, who made the list? Bad Take Boulevard. Worst takes? Not so much of the week this week. Today, an NFL draft edition of Bad Take Boulevard, and Houston You made the list. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.